The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 407, to be broadcast on Wednesday, August 7th, 2024, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She's not feeling well at the moment. If you are watching on Facebook Live, feel free to comment. We should be able to respond, or maybe I'll be able to respond without Fran here. It's kind of hard. But anyway, Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can just reach out to us right here below on the Facebook Live page, or you can also send me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. Say that again, Bicycle Talk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's Rant of the Week. Hey, Peacock. Yeah, Peacock. Yeah, NBC, Peacock, whatever you want to call them. I don't know. They're doing the Olympic thing right now, doing all that Olympic coverage, and which has been really fun and really great to watch and all. But I love Simone Biles. I think she's great. I love watching her. She's amazing. But please don't interrupt my Olympic men's road race with 45 kilometers to go. Come on. Figure it out. If you're going to broadcast something, broadcast it. That's it. You know, put her on a different channel. You've got all these different channels and configurations. And anyway, I was watching the other morning and it was live and it was 45K to go and things were really starting to get heated up and looking real good. And poof, all gone. Over to gymnastics. And so anyway, that's my rant of the week. I got a few rants of the week, but that one right there kind of caught me by surprise. I ended up solving the problem by going on to cyclingnews.com and following the typed in play-by-play that was happening because they were obviously able to watch it, but they were giving, you know, they were basically giving me some feedback on that. So I got to watch the whole rest of the race, but not actually see the rest of the race. Kind of a bummer, you know. Later broadcast, they put it back out so you could see it, but anyway. Carspiracy. I'm still loving that term, by the way. So opinion. This came out of Streets Blog. We'll talk about this a little later on. Democrats are calling Trump and Vance weird. Let's do the same for car dependency. Yeah, let's do that. That's a good rant. We'll go back to that one. But of course, more in the show. Positive side, the Olympics and USA women. Spoiler alert, if you've missed any of this, you may not want to listen further into the show because, you know, we're gonna talk about this a bit. We talked about it last week and we will talk about it again this week. There's all sorts of things that happened. We had the Olympic men's road race. We had the Olympic women's road race. Good stuff. Great course. Unbelievably long, really difficult. 170 miles for you U.S. fans, 270 kilometers or something like that for the Euros. It was just like long, epic, great course. Lots of short, punchy little climbs. It was just a good thing altogether. Gave everybody a good chance. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. So Paris Olympics, women are kicking butt again. Yep. And Mechanical Minute and Ron's Tip of the Week. The debate goes on those tubeless road tires. I'm going to get into this a little bit. I know, I always talk about the tubeless tires, But I'm just like, I'm overwhelmed by the number of flat tires that are happening in the pro race circuit. And we talked about this last week, and we talked about why it happens. And, you know, the fact is you're in a pack of 170 or 200 riders, and it's really hard to see the obstructions that are on the road and the things that can happen. But as if anyone was watching the Olympic road race and actually got to see this, Remco Evenepoel was on a solo breakaway coming into the finish, and he got a flat tire with 4K to go. And it's like he said he hit a cobble or something. Hit a cobble, got a flat, kind of weird. I don't know. Who knows? But anyway, there's more to that, which I will talk about a little bit later on. But in the meantime, I found this lovely site. And this was not the one I'm looking for. Here we go. So this was from, this is from a cycling weekly site, which is a British site. And it was basically entitled, "For the Safety of the Riders, World Tour Mechanics Are Still Choosing Tubular Over Tubeless Tires." Here we go. All right. Inner tubes, tubular tires, tubeless setups have all been on show. So why are the teams running different setups? That's a good question. And I, of course, you know my opinion on this if you listen to my show on a regular basis. And that is that I have deemed tubeless tires, especially in rough road conditions, to be hazardous and dangerous, and quite honestly, I wish they wouldn't use them, because the catastrophic blowouts that they have when they burp have run into some serious problems in the peloton. If you watch any of the early classics, you know, the early classics are great because they've got, you know, cobbles and dirt roads and all sorts of interesting, not so perfect roads in line for the riders. And so the flat tires were just tremendous, a lot of flat tires. And again, that catastrophic failure that you see when you slam a pothole with the tubeless tire and the tire literally ejects itself off the rim, that's that kind of a thing. So anyway, the mechanics, the big time, you know, the pro mechanics are starting to have issue with this. So I just thought this might be something I could bring up again, because, you know, the technology is really good. It's in the mountain bike world, it is a game changer. It totally is. You can run those mountain bike tires at a really, really low pressure, and you can continue to, you basically can ride through things that you couldn't normally ride to, because you get the tires really squishing out and they won't pinch a tube that way, which is good. That's all good, but you've got a much higher volume tire there, and that does make a difference as far as that goes. And but when you go start narrowing down the tires and we go to cross tires or gravel tires, you know, you'll have a little bit of a problem there. Plus the fact that if you do get a flat tire, which is catastrophic enough to blow that tire off the rim or completely collapse the tire, you can't really ride on it because it'll roll off the rim. It just doesn't work. Whereas a tubular tire, when you get a flat, you can continue to ride on it. So I was having this discussion yesterday with a bunch of old-time bike geeks like myself. We all kind of got together for something. I'll talk about that a little later in the show. But these tubeless tires, I'm not sold on them yet on the road scene. So apparently there are a number of mechanics that are not sold on it either. So one mechanic says, for me, it's more for the protection and safety of the rider. Okay, and this is Valentin Aumont, head mechanic at Liv Jaco Ayura. Because, okay, tubeless with the inner tubes inside them protects, the tubeless with the inner inside protects the rim, but the tubular with the glue on the rim can be more safe. If you have a puncture, the rider can keep riding the bike. That's the point right there. You can ride on them. They are not going anywhere. When a tubeless setup does fail in a race scenario, it's often a often catastrophic. No inner tube and more commonly hookless technology can leave the tire liable to completely come off the rim, which is dangerous, can make wheel changes problematic. So the women's World Tour squad was riding a mix of 28 and 30 millimeter tubular tires on 50 millimeter rear and 42 millimeter Kadex wheels based on the rider's preference. This mechanic said that over at Liddy Trek, he was told the decision was to run tubeless was more down to rider preference. It's a rider's choice, one mechanic told me. It's also the feedback from the mechanics. We had a wide range from Pirelli that we could choose from. So they were choosing 28 millimeter Pirelli P0s. And you know, they're running about 82 PSI of pressure, which is much harder setup than on rivals on tubeless setups. So the tubeless tires, you can run a little bit less pressure in them because they are tubeless and they generally tend to react a little bit better there. Visa Lisa bike, they were all running the same modern day setup. Corsa, Vittoria Corsa Pro tubeless tires, 30 millimeters in width. But again, we have seen these things fail. So it really kind of depends on the opinion of the mechanics and the opinion of the riders and what they want to ride on. Personally, if I knew that I had a tire that was going to possibly give me more performance, I would be interested in it for sure. But not in my current state, but as a professional rider, right now it doesn't matter. You know, it can be as heavy as you want it to be, and I'm not going fast anymore, so that's not really a problem. I'm much more of, and I was too when I was racing my bike. I was always a ride the dependable stuff, not the lightweight stuff. And I remembered seeing people break crazy things on their bicycles because they rode on stuff that was too light. Problem is, if you do it in a race, you don't race anymore. You're out of the race. So rather than risk the lightweight, high performance type gear like that, I was much more of a, I'm going to ride on something a little bit more durable. And I'm not a heavy guy. I'm a real lightweight guy. So it doesn't really matter for me as much. I could get away with a lot more, but I just didn't like the risk. And, you know, I will say that I've never pulled out of a race because of a mechanical issue. And that's saying something. Now, I was my own mechanic. I was a mechanic in a bicycle shop at the time when I was racing my bike. I owned a bicycle shop at the time when I was racing my bike. So mechanicals were an embarrassment to me if I was going to have a mechanical, because I was, I was that guy that, you know, the bike's supposed to work good because I'm the mechanic. So anyway, whatever. So, the idea that you can get a slight puncture in a tire that's tubeless and then the sealant will fill it right up, it's a great idea. It's a great idea. And as long as you use enough sealant in the inside of that tire, it probably will work for the most part. But now you get people taking the risk of, well, we'll save a couple of grams and not put quite as much sealant in this tire because it'll make the bike a little lighter. Don't do that. Don't do that. Please don't do that. It just makes no sense whatsoever. I'd rather finish the ride. And that goes for me riding on a bike just out doing a casual ride. I don't like flat tires. I don't like having mechanicals. I don't like having flat tires. So I tend to ride on more dependable, less lightweight product. I'm even riding on right now, I am riding on an old Marinoni bicycle, which I picked up through a local bike shop who said, "Hey, Ron, we've got this old bike. It's in your size. And do you want it?" And I raced on Marinonis for years. I raced on Marinonis. I raced on Richard Sachs. I raced on a few different bikes. And, but then my very first race bike was a Marinoni. So I picked it up and I've been riding it the last couple of rides. Boy, I like that bike. It's steel. Yeah, it's that old, heavy, nasty steel stuff. I know, I know. There's lighter bikes out there, and I have lighter bikes. But this bike just rides so nice. And, you know, there's nothing like a bike that climbs fairly well. It's a little heavy. You know, it's definitely a little heavy, so the climbing is going to be a little bit more effort. But man, coming down the other side of those hills and carving through corners and letting the bike really rides by it. I'm amazed. It handles so nicely. I'm very impressed with it. So I'll pay a couple extra pounds for having a bike that feels nice underneath me. Also, the other beauty of the old steel bikes. This is an old Columbus tubing bike for any of you old crony aficionados out there. It's a Columbus SLX bike, so it's a lugged Columbus frame. Nice bike. Just a nice bike. It just rides nice. It's quiet. Doesn't make any noise. It just rides. The only noise I hear is me breathing hard, and that's fine. I'm good with that. I'm definitely good with that. So anyway, Bora riders were also risking slightly lower pressures on the cobbles. You know, they're trying to make these bikes more comfortable, so they're riding on really low pressures on these tubeless tires. And, you know, you're taking just a huge risk. You're just taking a big risk. And if you're doing this on your road bike that you're out riding on group rides with, I'd be a little cautious. You know, I mean, last thing you want to be known for is the guy that had a massive blowout on his tubeless tires and took down three of his friends. You just don't want to be that guy or that girl. You just don't want to be that person. So anyway, My tubeless debate goes on. It's going to continue on. I'm not sold yet. And I know I've heard it from all these people, but no, not there yet. Not there yet. Not willing to take the risk. I go down some pretty gnarly hills and roads, and they got some slam bang, you know, pothole crack type activity. My roads aren't perfect out here. They're beautiful, but they're not perfect. And because of that, I don't want to take the risk. And then, as I'm talking to a bunch of my old geeky friends yesterday, there is the moment when you do get that flat tire and you do have to put a tube in to get yourself home. And it's a mess. It's the sealant's all over the place. Just like, and you're covered in. No, thank you. No, thank you. Give me a good tubular any day over a tubeless tire. And right now I am riding on, you know, clincher tires right now, 28C, 30C clinchers, because they're, they got a nice ride. They got a pretty nice feel to them. Not a lot different than my little skinny tubulars, though, that I still have. I'm still looking for, and if anybody's out there listening and they know where I can get some good 28 or 30 millimeter tubular tires. They're really, really hard to find. And they're easy to find if you're looking for cyclocross tires, but I'm not looking for cyclocross tires. I'm looking for road tires. So I'll continue my pursuit of these because, boy, if you could take the combination of having a tubular tire and then on top of that, having it be a 28C tire, it just seems like the perfect solution. I used to ride years ago. Clement used to make a Championato del Mondo. It was a silk tubular tire that was a little wider than your racing tires were, and it was indestructible. It was just a really heavy duty tire because it was a little wider, and it was kind of a nice ride. But can't find them anymore. Can't find them. Plus, they're wicked expensive. You want to add the price or add to a price of a tire, make the threads out of silk, and things get a little bit more interesting. So anyway, we'll move on from that that debate on on tubeless tires and get into the Olympics. The Olympics. So once again, spoiler alert, if you have not caught up on the Olympic situation that's going on right now, then you might want to just, you know, la la la, you know, don't listen. But if you have been watching, like I have, boy, there's some great stuff. So that race that I was interrupted on the other day by my friends at NBC Peacock, who decided to show us gymnastics instead of the end of Great Race, it was just spectacular. There were attacks upon attacks. There were all sorts of places of which to do it. But the winner at the end was Belgian Remco Evenepoel. Heads up on this one too, he had previously won the Olympic time trial. So he's also, you know, he's the fastest man right now in the world. He is the time trial, you know, he's just got a lot of, you know, what was he? He won both the road race and the time trial in the Summer Olympic Games. He's also won the Vuelta a España in 2022, the UCI road race World Championships in 2022, the UCI Time Trial World Championships in 2023, which means that he is currently the Time Trial World Champion, and the Young Rider Classification at the Tour de France in 2024. So he wore the white jersey at the Tour de France. He was just, you know, he was in contention. He was very, very solid there. He gets off of that, comes out, wins both the time trial and the road race in the Olympics. A tip of the cycling cap to good old Remco Evenepoel. I'm impressed. He's young. He's fast. He's one of the many young fast that are now involved in the peloton. And they're making bicycle racing really exciting right now, to me, anyway. That's my opinion. And there's more coming. There's more coming. We're not done yet. So anyway, big shout out to Remco. But who is Kristen Faulkner? Ever hear that name before? Well, if you follow bicycle racing like I do, you'll find that she is the current national champion from the United States. She won the national road race here in the U.S., which immediately put her on the Olympic team, of course. And she was on there with Chloe Dygert. And, you know, Chloe's got great credentials. We talked about her last week, and she was third in the time trial after crashing her bike and then still getting back up and being able to finish with a bronze medal. And Chloe was one of the favored riders in the women's road race. You know, she's riding real well right now. Everything was good. Chloe got caught in a crash and bad. And, you know, just at the wrong time, big split in the pack, everybody, you know, different divisions going on. And the races, you know, it was very interesting. Dygert actually, you know, clawed her way back in. After crashing her bike and with a few other riders, and it was like the who's who of women's bike racing are all in the Olympics. So all the hottest professional riders out there, and then there's Kristen Faulkner. So I have some background on her because let me explain exactly what happened. When it got down to the end, Faulkner had fallen back in a chase group and was chasing down the likes of some of the best of the best in women's cycling, and you know, she was in a group and she ended up clawing her way back to the front group. Now she's looking at a couple of just like amazing people, and she's in there with them. And you know, there's no race radio, there's no one on the radio in the team car that's saying you got to go now because you don't want to be sprinting against Lottie Capecchi. You just don't want to be doing that. And but she figured that out. She's real smart. I just thought the tactics were good. Everything about this woman, I'm very, very impressed with. And I'll talk a little bit more about her because I just really think that she's the hot up and coming rider. She's just amazing. She got into the Olympic road race after Taylor Nibb resigned from the event. She was going to be in her place, but she Taylor Nibb wanted to go for the Olympic triathlon instead. And, you know, she didn't make a great choice. She finished like 13th, I think, overall in the Olympic women's triathlon. So, you know, she's a great rider. She's a very, very strong rider. But she decided that she wanted to put all her focus there instead of putting her focus on the road race. And so that's where she went. And Kristen Faulkner got her position. So isn't that cool? And, you know, it just seems like, you know, she's done fairly well, you know, in her racing now that she's a professional cyclist. She ride and she was a stage eight of the 10th La Vuelta Feminine. She did, you know, well there. That was on May 5th. She just, you know, she looks really, really good on her bike. I'm very, very impressed. But she took the spot of Nibb, who resigned from the road race to focus on time trial and triathlon events. She'd already been named to the U.S. Olympic triathlon team when she won the 2024 USA Cycling Time Trial National Championships earlier in the year. So, you know, it's actually a good thing for her to go in that direction. But here comes Faulkner at 31 years old, Alaskan native, and she's got her Olympic debut, and she is with, like I'm telling you, she was with Gopecki and, oh God, what else? Who was the other woman who was there? I have to go forward on this to get there. She looked at the situation and went, well, these are two of the best women in the world, and I have to make a decision. And her decision was to attack. And they let her go because they don't know who she is. So, you know, here's this crazy American woman who makes an attack, and she's sitting amongst, you know, the best of the best in women's bicycle racing. And they just kind of looked at each other and let her go. And she went. And she went long and hard. And she just, it was a door opener. It was a huge, huge door opener. So she gets down low, takes off, and off she goes. So she's a fairly relative newcomer to the sport. She only started cycling in 2017. At that time, she lived in New York City, and she wanted an outdoor activity to balance out her full-time job and tried a free class at Central Park. She showed up in running shorts and sneakers and learned how to clip in and ride around corners, she said. A few weeks later, I won my first race, and that's when I knew I wanted to see how far I could go with the sport. So, in a field of veteran riders like 2012 gold medalist Marianna Vos and Lotte Kopecky, the silver and bronze medalist from the 2024 Olympic road race, because they let her go, her rise to the top was pretty quick. So pretty cool stuff. She quit her venture capitalist job in 2021 to pursue a full training full time. She was a Harvard grad. She was rowing at Harvard when she was at Harvard. She wasn't a cyclist, and yet now she is the Olympic champion. Pretty cool stuff. So anyway, that's where she kind of comes from. And, you know, it was just an amazing, amazing race to watch. I was just so, so impressed with her. And you don't just, you know, all of a sudden get yourself on a bike and you're stronger than everyone else, and all of a sudden you're smart. Smart doesn't happen. It has to be, you know, there's got to be some experience out there. She just literally blew them away. And she put a 20 or 30 second lead on them and held it to the end with not that much left in the race, but still good decision, good time after chasing them down and catching them. So we're all over this girl because she's... She's a hot shot as far as I'm concerned. I am just super, super impressed with her. And it was just a really, really fun, fun race to watch. She grew up in Homer, Alaska. Okay. And she says she's proud to be from this fishing town. She's also passionate about gender equality and supporting more women in technology and entrepreneurship. So there it is. Pretty cool stuff. She's also going to be on the track tomorrow is when the track, the women hit the track. I've got that on my list here. So she could win a second medal in the games in the team pursuit because she's in the team pursuit on the track. So we'll see what happens. But wow, 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 wow. Out of nowhere comes Kristen Faulkner. We're going to keep our eyes on her. You know, I don't know. You know, 31 years of age, it doesn't make her the youngest woman in the Peloton, but I'm going to give her one of the smartest women in the Peloton. So what does it come down to? It comes down to the very end. And this is what I watch women's bike racing and I appreciate it and all, but it generally comes down to the same thing at the end. It's the cat and mouse at the end. Who's going to sprint first? Who's going to lead out? You know, and they're almost always together. There were so many attacks in this Olympic road race. It was the best road race I have watched, best women's road race I have watched in years. I was really impressed. So if you haven't had a chance to see it yet, you should definitely go back and, you know, go to YouTube or NBC or whatever and watch the race, because it was classic. It was good stuff, really good stuff, and far more interesting than some of the women's pro bike races I've watched in the past. I was impressed. So we're gonna say goodbye to Kristen, because she was just so cool. I thought it was just wonderful. And then, I knew there was another page I had on her here. But there's been a lot of articles about her, a lot of things written about her and all. She's definitely, she's a goat. Definitely a cool thing. And this is, by the way, just to go back in time, because I am kind of a back in time guy. The last woman I saw win a road race medal was 40 years ago, and that was Connie Carpenter back in the day. I almost put that in as a trivia for the beginning of the show, but I forgot to do it. And so anyway, there it is. We'll let you know that it was Connie Carpenter in the past. So this was like a big deal. 40 years. That's a big gap. Really, really big gap. And so anyway, this is fun. It's really, really fun. Chloe Dygert definitely went down hard, but she certainly was, you know, in strong pursuit at the end too. I give her credit. She's a strong, strong person. But we just never expected to see Kristen sprinting against two of the top riders in the world, and she didn't either, so she took off. It's great. Fun race. Really fun to watch. That was fun to watch. Watching Remco Evenepoel, 4K to go, and he gets a flat tire, and he's like a minute and a half out on everyone, and he's waiting for his team car, and he's waiting really impatiently, and there's a lot of shouting going on, because he's got no bike, and he's calling for a bike. They got a bike to him in time, and he was able to continue on. It's just, there's just been some good stuff going on. It's very interesting watching the Olympics, and I'm not sure if the Worlds are the same way without the race radios, but it's no race radio changes everything about, you don't know who's 8 minutes up the road in front of you. You have no idea who that is unless you were paying attention. You got to watch the race a lot more carefully, and they were using, you know, they're still using whiteboards, but this was the interesting thing they were doing. They were actually, they're still able to hand up bottles, but they were writing on the bottle to get information to the riders, because they had no way to communicate with them. They couldn't tell them anything. It was against the rules. And the Olympic rules are different. So they were writing messages on water bottles and handing them up water bottles. And they'd look and they'd read the bottle and go, oh, geez, I got to get going, because, you know, this guy's still you know, 4 minutes out, we got to pick up the pace, whatever it is. But yeah, it was kind of fun. It made it all very, very interesting Olympics, and it was fun. It was fun to watch. So, yeah, I look back and see, where is she here? The woman who decided to participate in the triathlon and not participate in Taylor Nibb. She was 19th in the triathlon, Olympic triathlon. Bad choice. But then again, good choice. Good choice for someone. You know, you never know. You just don't know whether you're going to have a good day or not. There's just so many different things that you really, you know, you really can't anticipate. It's bike racing. That's what it's all about. So, you know, flat tires, all sorts of things can really, really change the way everything happens. So anyway, that's our Olympic coverage for now. There's more coming up tomorrow. We're going to more racing on Tuesday. It'll pick up with the women's team pursuit qualifier on the track. There's Jennifer Valente, Chloe Dygert, and Lily Williams, who are trying to qualify on the track. And of course, we'll see more of Kristen too. That's basically coming up tomorrow. So, I have to reflect back. I talked about this last week. I talked about my friend Susan Daniello. Susie, as I always knew her, but everybody knew her as Big Mama, because Big Mama was just, by the way, very, very small, slight woman, but Big Mama was the size of her heart. She's just an amazing person, married to Guy Daniello, long time, young, they fell in love really young. Guy's a big bike racer. Sue got involved in the bike racing thing because of that. She never really raced her bike, but she got involved in cycling, and there was a memorial service for her. She lost a five-year battle with lung cancer. So, but I mean, hundreds of people showed up to this thing. The beauty of it is, and that is that Sue said, I don't want this to be anything, you know, morbid or whatever, or dark, because, you know, I'm no longer with you. I want this to be a party. So it was a party. That's what it was. A lot of people said nice things. Her son, Kurt, was amazing, absolutely amazing, very thrilled. Good for you, Kurt. That's a hard thing to do, to talk about your mom like that. And your story was really cool too. But anyway, and I got to see my old friend Guy, and Guy and Sue owned Amity Bike Shop, and they still own, Kurt still operates Amity Bike Shop in Woodbridge, Connecticut. So, and Kurt has kind of taken on his mom's role, and he promotes races, and, you know, same activity and idea. The Laurel Bicycle Club is a big bike club down there in New Haven area. And just anyway, the who's who of everybody I know in cycling and involved in the racing scene just was there yesterday. A lot of people coming up saying, hey, we're coming to the cross race, you know, because, you know, the cross race is coming. Talk about that in a minute. You know, just old-time bike shop owners that I know from the many years that I was a bike shop owner, and also I was in the industry. Saw an old friend who I used to race with many, many, many years ago, now lives out in Ohio, Rudy Soroka. That was kind of fun to get together with him. There's just, it was fun. It was a really, really fun day, because I got to see a lot of people. We got to talk about a lot of things. We talked about Sue a lot because of everything she has done. You know, I mentioned last week that she was the one that got me started with my very first cyclocross race 41 years ago, and promoting that race at Mansfield Hollow, which is still going on. So anyway, just really fun to get together with my old cycling friends and chat, and probably stayed too long, but that's all right. It was fun. It was definitely fun. And sad that Sue is gone, but her legacy will remain forever. She is an integral part of bicycle racing here in Connecticut. So let's see what else we have here. So I had mentioned this thing earlier, that this comes off a Streets blog, and the quote here is, "Democrats are calling Trump and Vance weird. Let's do the same for car dependency." And, you know, it's kind of a weird thing, you know, calling out weird behavior tactic is kind of being used a lot in politics, and we're going to see, unfortunately, more of that. But if you, I'm going to scroll down here, but what if we, like, flip the script here? What if we make it weird to create obstacles for people who want to get around without a car? Imagine a world where that is strange and out of touch to park in bike lanes, ignore pedestrian signals, text while driving, or shame transit riders. Imagine a world where mobility justice is the norm, ensuring everyone cycling and walking and taking transit could do it with dignity and safety, and car dependency would be a weird choice. Think about that. Wouldn't that be cool? Yeah, I know. I can dream. I can dream, and I will continue to dream. It's, you know, the thing is, the only way you can do this is you need to build collective power. It means voting for candidates who support bike lanes and transit services. It also means connecting with our neighbors, no matter how they get around, and equipping them with the tools to organize better transportation. Second, we could use the media strategically, collaborating with local news outlets, leveraging social media, and organizing a community event that can spread public awareness, create a narrative, and make mobility justice the new normal. This strategy allows us to share our personal stories and broader visions for a better community while pushing back against harmful, weird behavior. For example, this is written by an author in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Make sure I got this. It's Clive Lawrence. And this is, let's see here. They've done a lot in Cambridge. I don't know if you've been following this at all, but it really, really... they've got more bike lanes there now. They've got more protected lanes in Cambridge now, much more marking on the roads. It's changing a lot. And it's been noted as one of the faster growing changing cities in the country right now. So we just gotta keep voting in the right people. And seeing as it seems like older people seem to be the political candidates of choice these days, not all older, but there are definitely people who have been on the earth a little bit longer who get into politics. And what are the chances that they ride a bike? Probably a good chance that they ride a bike. And, you know, that's what we need to make the change. We need to let people see things. As I have said in the past, when I go and I make a presentation to anyone, I'm here because most of you that came here today came here looking through the windshield of a car or a truck to get yourself to this meeting, to this presentation. I see things different. I see them from the handlebars of a bicycle, and I'm here to talk to you about that today. And that's how you do it. If you can get the attention of your local leaders, and you can get them to just meet you on the street on a bicycle and take them for a 1 mile trip around town. 1 mile, that's all. Through intersections, showing them the difficulties that occur with a bicycle, showing them what they have to do to properly get through the intersection. It opens eyes. I'm telling you, it really, really makes a difference because they'll see things differently than they do through the windshield of a car. That's all there is to it. So we need to work more on getting more inclusive transportation out there. And we're in a really good position right now in this country to do that. So I continue to push this. I continue to push the idea. I continue to ask people to stay active if they can, because there's great opportunity here right now, especially with all the concerns about our environment and all the concerns about our health. which is another key factor which goes along with this. This is the time. So, you know, these are definitely things that you want to that you want to emphasize to your community. So don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to stand up and say something. Don't be afraid to stand outside of a local bike shop with a petition, you know, and say, hey, would you sign my petition? I'm trying to get better, safer cycling in my town, and I need some signatures to make this happen. You know, it'll cost you a little bit of time, but that time that it costs you may also save your life someday. Think about that. So, anyway, we'll move on here. there's a thing, there's a site called spiked-online.com, and it's not a conspiracy theory. There really is a war on the car. Well, you know, maybe not. And I think that there really is, there's definitely people who have an us and them attitude here about people on bicycles, and they have a misinformed attitude about it. But, you know, as long as you are out riding your bicycle and riding properly, like legally, not running red lights or stop signs, or not, jumping in front of cars without signaling or letting them know you're there, or, you know, pointing out to them or waving to them. As long as you're doing everything responsibly, you can change the way people see you as a bicyclist. My feeling is that everything that I do on my bike is reflective of everybody else who rides a bike. So if I am behaving improperly on my bike, then all drivers will look at me as the example of why they don't like cyclists. So you can change people's attitude. Just start riding right. That's all. Just be careful when you're out there. And be really good about communicating when you're making turns or lane changes or anything like that. You just do it right. That's all. If you need information on that, the League of American Bicyclists offers classes. And they offer classes for instructors to learn more about how do you teach people how to ride their bikes. Everybody knows how to ride a bike. Nobody knows how to ride a bike. You know, there's so much to learn. There really is. And, you know, you want to be safe. That's the key. You really, really, really want to be safe. So, yeah, I guess there's kind of, you have to look at it as there maybe cyclists are creating a little bit of a war on cars. But the end result is better fitness, better environment, less traffic on the roads. It just less congestion. There's so many benefits to it. And businesses thrive when communities change over towards cycling from cars. So, what can I say? Or we'll just let the planet burn up, right? There's your option. There's your option right there. Personally, I'm not a big fan of riding my bicycle when the planet is burning up. So, makes it a lot harder, that's for sure. And we've been going through a heat wave here, so that's what brings that up to mind. Anyway, moving on. Let's see, what else do I have here that's interesting that we can talk about? There's a few things going on in the bicycle retailer world that might need some. It seems like there's an awful lot of changes going on in companies being bought and sold, and some people buying their companies back, and it just seems like there's just a whole lot of activity there. Their numbers are not good for a lot of things, but then when you take a look at the fitness segment driving growth with Garmin, Garmin's revenues are up 14%. So is that because of cycling? Is that because of running, walking, whatever, fitness in general, that people want to have a Garmin with them so they can, you know, follow where they're going or whatever? You know, some sectors are up, and then there's others that are Shimano bike related sales are down 21% over the year over year in the first half. So we don't know what's going on in the bike industry. I watch it very, very closely. I am a subscriber to Bicycle Retailer, and so I can still stay in touch with my previous industry that I spent 44 years with. And, you know, it's interesting. We'll just have to see what happens. So I keep my eyes on that. If anything pops out that I really need to bring to your attention, I will certainly continue to do so on this format. We are not going to have time for that. So what I am going to do is I'm going to mention a few things that you need to know about. The Vuelta is coming. The Vuelta is coming. Yeah, the Vuelta España. Remember that? That's that big race that is in the last of the major classics that we have. You know, you've got the Giro, you've got the Tour de France, and then you've got the Vuelta. Well, the Vuelta is starting on the 17th of this month. That will be the same day as the Steeplechase Bike Tour, which is a Saturday, and it will continue on through the 8th of September. So yeah, the Vuelta is coming. Yay, good stuff. There's we'll be talking about this more in the future. There's I have route information. I have the teams that are showing up information. We're hoping that Sepp Kuss is healthy by then, because he's been battling with a kind of a shaking off a COVID problem, and so he's been a little bit under the weather because of that. So we'll see what happens. But I'm hoping for sure that he's back in it, because he has a title to defend, maybe, if they let him. You know, it really, he's a domestique. He's not really set to do that sort of thing, and last year was a fluke. And you know, once he set that barrier and all of a sudden got that much time on everybody else, the rest of the team was made to work for him, and he won the Vuelta last year, which was such a cool thing to see. It was really cool. So anyway, we shall see. And let's see here. I'm going to go down here. I'm going to move it right on to continuing with events here, because we have some major events coming up in our area. And I'm going to start running out of time. Number one on my list is the 2024 Steeplechase Ride and Walk on Saturday, August 17th. That is an organization which I have been involved with. It's our 33rd annual bike ride, and it's a big fundraiser for some local charities here in town. All the money stays local, which is really cool. And you get to ride on, you know, fabulous northeastern Connecticut roads, which are generally quiet. And if it's not quiet enough for you, we also have a 5-mile fundraiser walk too. So if you want to just do a walk instead of a ride, because you're not a big cyclist, we've got a parks tour which will carry you through 10 different parks in Willimantic. In the little tiny town of Willimantic, there are actually 10 parks, and it will guide you through all of those parks, which is kind of cool. A lot of people have done it in the past and said, I had no idea that those parks were there. So it's kind of fun. And we also have an 18-mile gravel ride, but we've added another additional 40-mile gravel route now too, which is 90% dirt roads and trails. So it's going to be mostly non-paved and mostly no cars. I mean, that's the beauty of it. It's just, there's no cars. If you see 10 cars on that 40-mile ride, I will be very, very, very surprised. So anyway, speaking of gravel rides, the Lime Rock Epic is coming up on Sunday, October 8th in Lakeville, Connecticut. I will talk to you more about that in the future. We'll be pushing that for my friend Richard. But the big one I want to mention right now is Project Mayhem Cyclocross Series, and it's coming this fall. And I have a list here of the races and the dates. And the first one is September 8th, which is a Sunday. That is at Mansfield Hollow State Park. That is my race. So that is the race that I've been involved with for the last 41 years. And September 14th, there's a race in Haddam Neck, Connecticut. On September 22nd, New Haven, Connecticut. October 6th, Newtown, Connecticut. October 20th, Portland, Connecticut. And November 17th, Wallingford, Connecticut. December 1st, Guilford, Connecticut. This is all part of the Project Mayhem Cross Race, projectmayhem.com, or you can find us on Instagram. Our race is, season opener is, I'll hold this up in front of the camera here, it's Damned at the Dam. Yes, siree. It's at Mansfield Hollow Dam. So that's the mayhem theme behind all this. A big shout out to my friend Jeremy Brazil, who spent some time working at Rainbow Cycle Sport back in the day. And that's when I first introduced him into riding bicycles and racing bicycles, and the rest is history. We met the other day on the cyclocross course, just kind of checking things out. So cool stuff, totally cool stuff coming up. Let's see, also that pretty much is what I'm going to cover as far as events go today. Finishing points, so how about those Olympics? Amazing performances, just surprising performances. Very, very cool. Remco Evenepoel, double gold after racing the Tour de France. Think about that. That's just, it's almost superhuman. It really is. And the Vuelta of España is right around the corner. So there's more coming up, and there's more Olympics. There's going to be a lot of track racing this week. I think we're going to see both men's and women's in the track. So that'll be interesting to see too. And I do love those listener comments. So please feel free to chime in whenever you can. 2024, you're riding more miles? Are you riding to commute to work or around town? Are you just going out and riding to, you know, enjoy yourself and stop and smell the roses and, you know, ride your bike because it's fun? So the other thing is I put out the Pedal and Run Challenge, and that is that take one day, park your car or truck, and ride your bike instead. You just might surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Fran Storch. And if you're watching on Facebook Live, you can leave a comment down here below, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org. iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you'd like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, please send me an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down, the wind at your back, and get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week. Yeah!